Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always is my brother Brendan, and together we make movies for DBS Films. Today's podcast, we are going in a scene-by-scene breakdown of our newest horror feature, The Haunting of the Murder House. You can actually watch The Haunting of the Murder House now free on Tubi, YouTube. We're looking at a lot of other platforms as well, too, if you want to go ahead and rent it and support indie film. But we also have The Girl in Cabin 13 and Into the Forest free on Tubi as well. Be sure to take a look at our Discord. We make movies for our fans with our fans. So if you ever wanted to be in a movie or just see more behind the scenes access, be sure to join us there. So in these scene-by-scene breakdowns, we basically take a look at the entire movie, what we liked, what we didn't like, what we would redo with scenes. And I'm actually really looking forward to this episode because, you know, over the past few months, we've been doing a scene-by-scene breakdown of each one of our movies. I think the thing that really stands out to me is the progression level to it. And, you know, after going through nine other features, with The Girl in Cabin 13 being a big step, I think The Murder House is really us capitalizing on everything that we, you know, really learned from the first movies. But I think it was also the big thing that we learned from Girl in Cabin 13 is that we can do it. You know, I always thought that that movie was a lot pulled back. It was a more passive idea in the sense that, hey, we know we can film this because it's super basic. Whereas I feel like Murder House was our first real stab at it in the sense of, hey, let's try and push the boundaries in this area. And then Shapeshifter, we really went, you know, farther with that. But to me, the big difference between Cabin 13 and The Murder House is I think we really started to, you know, dive in more and execute on our skills.
Yeah, I would agree. It's always nice to see these things uploaded, and we actually released it very quickly, as opposed to the other movies, which, you know, they have to have launch windows, so it takes 3 to 6 months. So we were able to upload it, and within probably a month, we had a ton of reviews. And so right now, it's kind of cool to just see, you know, we have 200 some reviews on Amazon. We have like 300 on IMDb. We have our reviews from, you know, our Discord. We have reviews on our Facebook ads that we're running. YouTube has a lot of ads. So this is by far the largest gathering of information as far as feedback goes for a movie. So it's really helpful. And I think this is one thing that a lot of filmmakers, especially indie filmmakers, struggle with, is they just never get to the point where enough people are watching their movies in order to get this feedback. So it's cool to just kind of compile it all, see what people like, see what people didn't like, so that when we actually do the 3.0 version of this movie, it's just going to be that much better. So, you know, I have my own personal thoughts on the movie. I'm very proud of it. I think it was our best movie that we did. Obviously, there's things I would, you know, change up or try and do better next time. But for the most part, I think for the first time, we took a really solid script. We took a really solid idea and we executed on it to close to perfection. I mean, this is the movie that was in my head. And I think the only difference, the difference in this movie, taking it from a good movie to a great movie, is just the devil's in the details. It just needed a few little things to just really take it to the next level. And I think a lot of reviews kind of pointed that out. I think this movie kind of messed with people's brains because it's right up there next to, you know, it was like Top Gun, Maverick, and Nope, and these huge $100 million blockbuster movies, under 50K movies right up there. So people are expecting, you know, high budget, which has set design, set decoration, you know, really good special effects. And I think when they started watching it and they saw that this is a very low budget indie horror movie, that's where the more the negative feedback comes from, because people weren't really able to explain why they didn't like this movie. It was just like very blanket statements, which is really the first time we've kind of actually experienced that. Usually they'll be like, oh, the sound's off, or the color, or the cinematography. For this one, people just couldn't really explain why they didn't like the movie. And my gut instinct is, you know, it didn't have the production design of, you know, multi-million dollar movies. It didn't have the special effects of multi-million dollar movies. And I think that kind of messes with some people when, you have a really good, well-paced movie, but it's just missing the smaller things that really make, you know, the movies look cinematic and that the Hollywood system has access to, as opposed to, you know, us being indie filmmakers.
Yeah, no, I really do agree with that. And I'm glad you mentioned, you know, that it was perfection kind of in what we had in our mind. And then also the idea that, you know, one of the big things in our mind is we understand our limitations. You know, we always look at the budget. We always understand from the very beginning of this, that this is going to be of this scale. And I also think we also know the pain of filmmaking. And, you know, when it comes from, you know, actually going and doing this process and making these things. So I think what really, it was a mix of things of one, yeah, we're getting better at executing, but also I think in our mind, when we were going into this process, you know, we knew our limits fairly well. And, you know, I completely agree with the idea that a lot of the feedback we're getting, you know, you see our film next to Top Gun Maverick, you're expecting, oh, this is easily a multi-million dollar film. And, you know, again, the absolute minimum scale that we do it on, it's really swinging in the big leagues when it comes to the reach of it, which, you know, hey, if you're going up against the big leagues, things are going to be much different when you start looking at the details. So I completely agree with that. And with that being said, we're going to go ahead and hop right into the newest film, The Haunt in the Murder House, which, again, you can watch for free. So really breaking it down, you know, the first thing, and I would say if there was anything I wanted to change, it would probably be this scene. Now, I don't think it's bad. I think it does a great job. I think we nailed the ending to it. But in the intro scene, we have our Officer Reynolds. He's getting a call from one of our Discord members, Katie, and basically letting them know that, hey, there is a disturbance at a house. Go ahead, check it out. They go ahead, they take a look, and then they go in and we have the throat slit scene, which came out really, really good. So I think once you get to the door, it's really good. But in hindsight and watching it, I do think it's a little bit slower in the sense of, you know, pacing wise compared to quick action going there. I think if you would have shown Lester or something like that. But again, I wanted to highlight that because overall with this movie, that's like the one scene that's on my mind that I kind of point to where I just feel like there should have been a little bit more. Like, honestly, if I had a little bit more of a budget, I probably would have tried to do like there's almost like a hostage scene a little bit, you know, like someone's out there, a cop's out there, like the cops pull up what's going on. And it's more of like a SWAT team element on a lower budget. But I think it just it takes a little bit to get going. So that's my overall thoughts on the intro. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I really liked this intro. I thought it was good. I do agree. I think the missing element is the stakes. You don't know what's in that house. So you don't know if that officer's in danger. You don't really see the girl. So you don't know like what's going on as far as the hostage situation. So you have, I think it's probably like a 4-minute sequence. 3.5 minutes of that are, you know, you don't really know what's going on. And I think there's really no stakes to it. Yes, there's creepy music. Yes, you probably understand that something crazy is going to happen, but there's really no stakes. There's no dialogue to elevate the stakes. I say, like, I agree with your idea. I think what we would do is like, you have dispatch call in and say, hey, an officer went to this house and isn't responding and we can't get in touch with them. So he, like, Officer Reynolds would be like the backup. And so at that point, you know, he already has his weapon drawn. He knows that, you know, he's back up to this situation. You don't know what's inside there. But if one officer already goes missing, then, you know, it raises the stakes because you know that this officer, Officer Reynolds, might go missing. And I think that's all it really needed. It needed just a little bit more to just raise the stakes for the officer because you didn't really know that. And I don't know if maybe showing Mo would have done that, raise the stakes a little bit, or showing the girl, or I don't know really how we would have done it. But it would be something we probably would have done in pre-production. But I agree. I think that just needed a little bit more stakes. But other than that, I thought it was a nice slow burn with a heavy hit climax. The climax didn't come off as well as I wanted it to, and I'm not really sure why. It'd have to be one that we just do in pre-production again. It just didn't have the intensity, and I don't know if that was just the shot selection, if that was like the dialogue, if it was just how we kind of cut it, but I spent a good amount of time trying to cut this together, and it was still the same. So I don't think it was bad, but I don't think it was like great. I don't think it was as good as I really wanted it to be. But I think it got the job done. Shows the clown. The throat slit was really cool. The gunshots were really cool. And it gets you into this movie. And this was by far our most watched movie from start to finish. Not only do we have the data on that, but just seeing people leave all these reviews. If people are leaving reviews on your movie, it means they're watching it all the way through. And I think Amazon doesn't even let you leave reviews unless you watch it all the way through. So the fact that we have all these reviews just means that this movie was watched all the way through from start to finish, which is goal number one. So obviously I can't be upset at this intro, but, you know, being a perfectionist, we definitely want to try and figure out like what went wrong and what we can do better so that when we do make Murder House 3.0, we really get something really spicy.
Yeah. And again, I mean, overall, I think it's a great intro. Like, it definitely compared to, you know, some of our other ones, like honestly, compare that to Girl in Cabin 13 and it's, you know, night and day difference. But it is one of those things, like you said, and looking back, we want to basically really try and always dig in and say, what is, you know, kind of the element here that was missing. And, you know, again, I love that idea. Backups there. You can even have the dead officer as like a body scare. There you go. There's one scare. There's a dead body. Something killed him. Increase the stakes. But overall, I think the throat slit though really saved it. And not only did it save it, I think it's also a testament to, again, you know, we did the throat slit in pre-production. So anytime you're doing it in pre-production, I can tell you what our best scenes are going to be. It's going to be the scenes that we did in pre-production. So that one really worked out to me. With that being said, we hop right into kind of the intro development. I thought we did a really, really good job of this. And this was something where I think you can really see the culmination of what we continued to learn in this process of show, don't tell, and the improvement. Because if you look at our intro development compared to Gone and compared to The Invited and compared to The Invited was actually not as bad, but like the worst one was like The Unseen. And this right away, you know what they're doing. They talk about what they're doing. You see it all. They basically get out of the van. They get set up. Harper's in charge as the leader, directing them. You have me in the van as Kel, basically plugging everything in, turning on the live stream, and then they get to the front of the door. So we'll kind of take this intro development element to it. I also think the song was incredibly good. And because of that song as well, on top of that moment, it's actually one of my favorite scenes. I think it's kind of nostalgic to me just because it's almost kind of like a symbol of our filmmaking. You know, like, look, we've made another one and this is kind of the scene I look to. But like, with that being said, I really just enjoy the flow of this character development.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like taking the next step in the filmmaking process, instead of having them set up and narrate to themselves exactly what they're doing. Oh, hey, I'm Harper. I'm the boss. I'm going to run the show. I'm, you know, Kai, I'm the co-host. I'm Steven, the intern. I'm Kel, the tech guy. We could easily had that conversation in the van. Instead, we kind of montage it up. And all you need to do, and this is kind of like how I break down scenes now, is I try and figure out like, all right, what's the objective of this movie? The objective is The objective of the scene is to show that they're going to live stream this and that they're setting up in the van and to show that they're going to the house that was shown in the intro hook. That's all. That's all we needed to do. And I think we did it in a fun, engaging way. It has really good music to it. And you immediately know, all right, these guys are streamers and they're going to go into this house where something bad happened. And I think a lot of, if I was doing this movie earlier in my career, you know, we would have had dialogue scenes. We would have had character development scenes. This would have been a character downbeat. Like they would have been like hanging out in front of the house doing stuff, no music, just boring dialogue. And I think it would have, you know, taken away the momentum of a pretty good intro hook. Now, you know, we realize those are the only two things that we need to show, that they're going into this house and that they're streamers. Can we do that with minimal dialogue possible? And we pretty much do this entire scene with no dialogue, and it's still engaging and it's good for the viewer. And, you know, the people are engaged and interested in the scene because, you know, they're watching it. It's not, you're not losing people by just having these dialogue downbeats. So I definitely think it's just next level filmmaking. You can see us take the next step up. I think we did some of this stuff in Girl in Cabin 13, but this is the first one where we did it where it was kind of smooth. So I do like this scene. So coming off this pretty good intro hook now to a really good downbeat scene, you know, we're ready to roll once they get inside the house.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And then, you know, the next scene afterwards, so you have that, you have the character development of what they're doing. But, you know, the next scene that I want to hop into is basically, will we mention as you develop as a filmmaker, you start to understand that you really need to reiterate the plot multiple times. People are not paying attention to your movie just because they're on their phone. It's a constant habit, is exactly what's happening. So they're not giving it the full attention. You really need to outline the plot in a clear way. And I think the next scene is something that we learned from Girl in Cabin 13. It's essentially the trailer where basically in one scene, you have them explain exactly what's going to happen here. And you're able to essentially tell the whole story. So the next scene where they're like, let's set up here. Hey, everyone. And they're talking to their stream. So this is a perfect way to talk to the audience because basically the audience is the follower and explain. We are here doing this. This is what's going to happen. This is what we're trying to do. And this will be fine. And obviously with the trailer, as they're saying things will be fine or what's going to happen, you're cutting in those darker elements to it. But I think it's something that you will always be able to see, you know, in The Shapeshifter. It's a little bit later in the movie with the Roger scene, but you're always going to have one of the first plot scenes where they're explaining what's happening after the intro being, audience, here is clearly what is happening. And I think you have to do this as a filmmaker. I think at every level, I think it's really good storytelling more than anything. But I think especially now, just with, you know, attention span and everything, you have to sit the audience down and say, this is what it's going to be. Now, with that being said, you can find an engaging way to do it. You know, what the plot is, what the angle is. And I think with the idea that they're streaming, going to horror houses, it fits. It makes sense to me. So what are your thoughts on the whole trailer scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to explain it. I think a lot of people are watching these movies, you know, on their phones. They're watching them late at night. Our movies are not in theaters, so they're always going to do something. I mean, I watch a lot of movies, you know, while I'm working, and I listen to them, and I try and follow along. And really, a good movie, I'm able to follow along with the plot without watching the movie. You should be able to listen to your movie and understand everything that's going on. The movies, there's a lot of movies out there where I'm just like, what is going on here? If I'm not actively watching this movie, I'm completely lost. And I think that's just the audience of today. I think it's something you need to do as an indie filmmaker. Your intro hook should show some piece of the story. And then, you know, when you first do your characters, you should understand what they're trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish. When your villain or your antagonist comes in, you should be able to describe or show what they're trying to accomplish. And then at the end of every act, you should recap it. So it's like after the first act, recap what's going on. You know, after the second act, recap what's going on. And then at the third act, right before you go to the climax, you want your final kind of like, look, this is the climax. There's 10 minutes left in this movie. Here's exactly what's going to happen. And I think if you do that and you do it in clever ways, you know, you'll keep your audience engaged and understanding what is going on. And a lot of our early movies, especially the first 8 movies, we had a lot of feedback that was like, I don't know what's going on in this movie. I can't follow it. And people who get confused or can't follow something, just turn it off. So you just want to, it's probably better to just do more touches and make it super clear as opposed to being just a little bit vague. Because if you confuse your audience, they're going to turn it off. And like, the watch rates on these are so important that click is so valuable in the beginning to get them to watch your movie all the way through that I'd rather, you know, stay on the side of caution and tell these people a lot through like clever dialogue or show them exactly what's going on, as opposed to only do a couple and try and like kind of let them figure out and, you know, solve what's going on. I just don't think that's in today's atmosphere and today's, you know, audience that you're trying to reach with these movies. I just don't think it's a good idea. And they're just going to turn it off. Our vague movies like The Invited, Into the Forest suffer from a lot of that. People just turn them off. So it's better to just make it very clear what's going on, continually make it clear all the way through the steps of the movie. And then I think you'll keep your audience engaged with what's going on because they know what's going on.
Yeah. And I think it's super critical. It's something you're always going to see. So we go from that scene. We also have like a little highlight montage of the team, which, you know, does take away from the tone a little bit. But it is something that, you know, it's different. So it does break that up too. Then we get them in the house and they start immediately explaining kind of the stakes of the house. So the next scene, I think, again, we're really stacking some plot here in this section, but really this is the time to do it. You know, this is where we see it when it comes to the girl in Cabin 13 with Joe. This is where you see it in The Haunting of the Morgan Estate. This is basically plot building time. So we get them in the house And then we just basically connect the dots here. You know, this is the house that everyone got in, that the cop got shot in, that people got murdered. And you get a little bit more about Lester. So I think, you know, while it is a downbeat, the reason it's much better is they're actively creeping and things can happen. So I think because they're creeping and they're moving, while it is a downbeat, it's a much better downbeat. A good one to point back to, the couch scene in the Morgan estate. Two of the same things. You explain your backstory, Eli, explain the backstory of the house. And it just shows the massive difference, even from one movie and two movies away, that you get from basically making them. So what are your thoughts on the, you know, development deeper in the plot as they enter into the house?
Yeah, I'm really happy with how this turned out, because this is obviously, you have to explain the lore of the house. This is the biggest issue that people had with the Suicide House, is they never understood who the demon was or the antagonist was. And so we're like, all right, we're going to make it very clear. This guy wore a clown mask. He abducted these people and he was possessed when he did this. And we did that in three different steps, because I was like, all right, we can sit here and, you know, talk about this for 8 minutes and bore the audience, but we learned from that in the Morgan estate. So you have one, you know, thing where they're in front of the fireplace where they're explaining this is home of Morgan. This is home of Morgan Lester, and he abducted all these girls and killed them. Then they start walking and they're like, all right, in this room, you know, this happened, and, you know, he hid he chopped them up and put them in the walls. And then they go into the garage, and we break up the dialogue dumps with a scare, which is smart. And then we have one more final dialogue dump where he's by the wall, or where they're all by the wall, where they find Lester's wall with all the writing. And they explain that, you know, he's a possessed man, like he snapped and he became possessed. So boom, you know, three really engaging scenes, because you have movement. We threw a pop scare in between those to kind of break them up. And, you know, we have enough lore now to just move forward with this movie. We don't need to linger on this. Everyone knows this guy wore a clown mask and he became possessed and he chopped up and killed girls. That's all you really need to do. And I thought we did it in a clever way. We learned from the Morgan estate. We learned from the Suicide House. And I don't think anybody turned it off here. I think you have enough to actually get your audience to look forward to what's coming next, because you're already foreshadowing, hey, look, you know, this guy's going to come back, you know, he's going to be in this house and he's going to be the one to haunt them. Especially if you see in the trailer, you see the clown mask all over the place. So I think that's just, you know, taking the next step, learning from our mistakes and just creating a better product.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree here. I mean, it is something where you just basically can take, you know, the same exact scene, the same structures. And the only thing different is really the execution. Yeah, the plot's a bit different and probably the writing's stronger and, you know, some plots are going to make it easier, but, you know, it really does show just kind of the improvement there. So, you know, we go through that first scene. Harper's like, all right, guys, time to go ahead and get set up. She accidentally kicks over the pallet with the nail, which I will give you credit on that one. That is foreshadowing that people didn't enjoy, in the sense of, you know, what ends up happening at the end. But basically, again, Harper showing the characters, you know, she's in charge. She's kind of bossing Dylan around. Kai's kind of like, meh, I'm in a van working on things. And then we have our first pop scare really inside the house, which is the head moving from Dylan, which I think could have been better, but I think it serves its purpose, which again is just basically a loud noise. You know what I mean? Almost kind of like, what was that? And then it's like, what did they see? It was quick. So they probably didn't see it. Maybe that's going to catch their engagement. Maybe they're going to rewind the movie. And, you know, again, that's what you want. You want interaction. You want engagement. You want to capture the attention. So I think, while it could have been better, to me, it's kind of, I know the trash can is considered really good, but I feel like it's kind of a trash can level. Again, the trash can is where we just cut to a loud noise or something like this. We talked about it before. You don't want to be too cheap that people feel like, come on, this is too much, but you need to do it. And I think it kind of served its purpose perfectly for that. Just adding a noise in there to just kind of propel it forward. Because again, you know, we've just had two long dialogue dumps for it.
Yeah, I think it's just, you have to be careful, because you don't want to do anything too crazy, you know, in the beginning. Because your scares are just going to be off. And we wanted to just kind of build them up slowly. And I think we actually did a really good job of building up this movie, starting with scares that are either realistic or very, you know, quick. So I thought we did a good job with that. But I think, you know, I think the pacing in the movie is just a little bit off up until we get them to probably like the lock-in sequence. I think we could have gone a little bit faster here, or I would just maybe move the Ouija scene up in this movie, because the Ouija scene is really, really engaging. But I think it did slow down the pace of the movie because it was just a very long sequence. And I think I would have just rather, you know, they find that thing and they do the Ouija board here, which then would allow us to go a little bit crazier, you know, after that lock-in sequence. I think it just makes a little bit more sense. Because if I were to look at this and how we pace these scares, I think after the lock-in sequence, which is a very startling sequence, it does take a small step back with the Ouija scene. That being said, the Ouija board scene is like one of my favorite scenes. I thought it turned out really great. I just think it kind of slows that pacing down. I would have, if we do the 3.0 version, or when we do the 3.0 version, I think you would have moved the Ouija board here. And I think you would have had a better paced movie, because that would have allowed you to maybe introduce the clown a little bit faster and then had more of the climax of them not being able to get out, having Mo come after them, which raises the stakes of the movie.
And then real quick, I think I'm going to make this three parts.
Okay.
We can do two tonight, but if we pick one up, that'll give us that Monday of two more. If we just do one, and then that'll give us the buffer Monday.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I really do agree. You know, it is something where probably a little bit more speed, because as we're looking at it, but I think this is something, you know, again, this is why it's best to look at the movies, because I think we always have a down pitch right here, because you have to explain the lore, like you're saying, and you only have such a limited amount of, you know, scares you can actually do. We've talked about it before. You know, you basically have to ramp into these scares. You have to have passive scares, which are like not life threatening. Whereas if you have active scares, it's like, why would you just leave? You know what I mean? Like, oh, hey, don't lock us in. Cause at this point, they're still not locked in yet. So, you know, it's hard to figure out what it is. But I do think, yeah, you know, if you got the Ouija board moving quicker there. Overall, though, you know, I think once you get past here, we start cooking. So, you know, we get through the first pop scare there, they get set up, they basically explain again, you know, hey, this is what's going to happen, where we're going to get locked in. So I hop out of the van, I got my chain, which I like that scene. Again, I think the music worked really well. I think the cuts were really good. You got the noise of the chain hitting. It's a good hard cut. Walks up there, quick engagement, you know, letting everyone know, hey, guess what? The stakes, here's the stakes of the movie. And then, you know, from there, we hop right back into the tour of the house, where we're going basically, you know, hey, we're in this house. Now we're officially locked in. Here's the details. Here's the different rooms. So I think when you go from that first attention grabber, whatever it might be, we then reiterate to the audience, I would say this is kind of the second time saying, we are now locked in this house. This house belonged to Lester Morgan. He was not a good guy. He got possessed. And, you know, like you said, it is the movement of it. It's moving from one room to the other. It's really a good flow. So, you know, thoughts on the lock-in scene, and then kind of immediately just talking about the house. Because again, you set the stakes, you know, you have a pop scare and then you set the stakes and then you give them more plot. And it's really just, it shows you how you really want to stack a movie. Because, you know, again, compare it to just some of our older movies, compare it to The Unseen, compare it to The Morgan Estate, even Suicide House. There's just this long nothingness, and we have a nice, almost like a stair step of tension rising to it in a nice gradual way.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a really good screenplay. I think, you know, we lock him in now. So you just saw the clown for the first time. So you know he's in there. And then we go, and the next scene is you or Kel locking them in the house. So you're raising the stakes immediately. You already took care of the lore, so the lore's done. Now you know, you saw physically that there's a clown in there, and you know they can't leave. You know they're staying there till the weekend or the sun rises. So I think you have everything you need right now. You have a solid foundation for this movie. This is probably the end of the first act. And you know who the main characters are and what they're trying to accomplish. You know who the antagonist is. You know the stakes. You know, this guy's killed people before. He's possessed. He's some kind of paranormal entity. And, you know, they're locked in there. So as a filmmaker in a screenplay, or when you're writing a screenplay, really after the first act, this is the stuff that you need to make sure your audience knows. You've made it very clear so that when you can move on, or we can start picking up the pace of the movie, you don't need to worry about, you know, bringing this stuff up again. And I thought we did a really good job in this movie. I think we're, for the first time, we're in a really solid place, which allows us to, you know, focus on the scares and the pacing and just getting the action and get the, you know, keeping the viewer engaged in this movie. And I just watch a lot of indie filmmakers and they just, you get out of that first act and you have no idea what the motivations are for the main characters. You don't know the antagonist and what their motivation is, and you don't know the stakes. And if you can't answer those three things, then, you know, you're going to have to pick them up or bring them up later on in the movie. And to do that, to go back and try and explain that stuff is going to slow your pacing down and you're just going to be in trouble. So I think this is the first time we had a really clean screenplay. We answered all the questions that need to be answered, which allowed us to make just a much faster paced movie.
Yeah, I mean, you're really starting to see those improvements stack up specifically in kind of where we've been the weakest, which is this area. So we're locked in. They're explaining everything. And then again, you know, we have the light pop scare with Dylan. So Dylan's going over. He, you know, they finish their tour in the garage. They basically send them over to the hallway. He flicks it on and there's our clown again, a nice little pop scare. And you know what? One of the feedbacks that we've been getting, clowns are scary. And, you know, I think that's very true. In the sense that, you know, they are, they're kind of spooky. And it was just having that clown, having, you know, Mo there basically to just be that pop scare again. You know, we saw him in the beginning, we're seeing him there. It makes sense that he's kind of like a ghost with the mask on, but I think it helps those scares hit really hard. You know, we also were doing just a lot of keyframe work to kind of, you know, mold two scenes in there, but I think it adds a paranormal element to it. You know, it gives you the scare with the noise. And now if you look at it at 18 minutes, you know, we've already had basically four pop scares. So you're looking at four pop scares, 18 minutes. You look at some of our earlier movies, you might have four pop scares the entire movie, if less.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you have to, you know, keep these, you know, keep the audience engaged. Unless you're building like a slow burn, you know, horror movie, which you can do, they're just very difficult to pull off. I think the hardest thing for indie filmmakers to pull off is tone. And I think it's just because that to pull off tone, you have to have really, really good acting. You have to have really good dialogue and you have to have really good settings and scenes and just cool stuff. And we just don't have access to any of that as a indie filmmaker. So the best way to do to keep your audience engaged, especially with horror movies, is just make sure you have pop scares. And yes, some of them may be cheap and, you know, they might not be the best, but it's better to do something as opposed to nothing. And, you know, people be like, oh, they got me with that one, but, you know, you felt kind of cheap. Trust me, you know, especially with this movie, with Girl in Cabin 13, one of our highest scares was a stupid trash can scare. I'm telling you from experience, just make sure that every five to eight minutes, you should be doing something as far as like something that's going to startle, jolt the viewer, a scene that is just intense, just to keep that person engaged. If you're missing with that, that means you're going, you know, 15 minutes without any kind of strong beats, people are going to turn it off. You have to keep pushing this plot forward with dialogue. You got to keep pushing the plot forward with pop scares. The whole goal is to, once the user starts this, or once the viewer starts the movie, they stay all the way on. And the way to do that is just make sure every 5 to 8 minutes, something happens. Something really pushes the plot forward. Because if you don't, you're going to have those lulls, those downbeats, those kind of voids, and they're going to turn your movie off.
Yep. And that is the worst thing. So you got to basically do what you have to do. You know, they're there for a reason, and it's just kind of your job to make it that it's not a cheap way, or it's not that cheap, and, you know, go from there. So you have that scare, and then basically this is, again, increasing the elements. So now you have a frightened Dylan. You know, you have someone who's seen something for the first time. He comes back in there, and the next thing you know, you got a bunch of crazy writing behind them. So there's kind of like, oh man. And then what do? We have your attention. We got a pop scare, we got a setup to it, and what do we say? We say this was a possession. look, he got possessed. Did we mention he got possessed? Because he got possessed. And in our past movies, specifically Into the Forest and The Haunting of Suicide House, the problem wasn't that we didn't have a plot. We had a plot there. The problem is we had so much of a plot. It wasn't just one thing. So Rosemary Adams had a baby, and then this happened, and then a family moved in, and then that happened. That's what was the Suicide House. In this movie, it was Mo. He got possessed. And, you know, he attacked the person and there's a possession. It's a possession. So, you know, to me, this goes back to, again, those stairs where you're kind of building off of it. But this whole scene ends up, we have our pop scare. We have our build up. Here's the plot that we basically deliver. And it follows in that suit. And I think, again, this is a very smooth one, from walking around the house to having the pop scare to being in the garage to, you know, for the first time you get Dylan, like, I don't like this room. You know, I'm scared. Which, again, you want to start escalating that there's issues and there's tension, and then having them basically be like, well, here's exactly what happened. So if we do have your attention from the pop scare, we immediately feed you some more plot.
Yeah, I think one thing that we really should highlight, too, is how smooth this movie is. The scenes just kind of flow together. So just to give you an example, they're walking and talking. They go into a room. They need a light. You get a pop scare. You come back. They turn the light on. Boom, you're prompted with a wall of crazy writing, which gets you into your lore dump. The minute they finish that, their walkie-talkie goes off, and now they're going into another sequence. So I think a lot of our movies, especially Devil in the Room and Morgan Estate, were very blocky. They just were like, all right, these are, you know, the sequences that we're going to do, and we kind of just stacked them on top of each other. And you could feel it. They're like little blocky scenes. And it kind of messed with the pacing a little bit because it took you a little bit out of it. With this one, we were just very clever with everything that we did to make sure, all right, the room that they're going into has something to take them into another room, or something's going to happen that's going to move them to another area of the house. And we kind of smoothed all that stuff out. So it seemed like it was almost, it was not a one-er, but it felt like that. It was like, all right, they're going to this room to discover the writing on the walls. And then the EMF readers are going off, and that's going to take them into the fake scare with the chandelier. And that's going to move them out of that room, you know, into the next scene. And I think that's just the next level of filmmaking. But I also think something you should really pay attention to when you're writing these screenplays, to really try and make sure that, you know, when you're writing the sequence that you are now, that you could kind of smooth it out and make it seem seamless. You don't want to have forced, essentially transitions. And this is one of my reasons why I don't like B-roll, as far as like exterior B-roll, interior B-roll, that stuff like that. I'd much rather do the hard cuts on noise. I think it's just a much more seamless process. But I watch a lot of indie films, and I'll tell you the one thing that indie filmmakers do more than anything else is just B-roll. It's like exterior B-roll, B-roll of the moon, B-roll of trees, just all this B-roll. And I think it really makes your movie look kind of janky, as opposed to something like Edgar Wright. Look at all his movies and how he cuts and edits them together. They're seamless. They're very smooth. And, you know, he'll cut on noise, but I think the next level, so it's like the first level, the amateur levels, B-roll and just cuts to filler cuts. Then you get something like Edgar Wright, where you're starting the next scene with noise. It's like the teapot goes off, you cut to that. Or the one we did in this one is where like slamming equipment down and you're cutting on that. But I really think like the God tier way to do it is just make sure that your scenes all flow together, that they can just move. Because even you go from the EMF reader, they move all the way around. Then what do? They find the hole, which takes them into the lock-in sequence. So I think like that's just the next level of filmmaking. I was really proud of like how smooth this whole movie was.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. It is something, I think it does help that this one has that condensed timeline. You know, it is all in one night, which is why we talk about it so much, in the sense of, you know, we're really itching to just basically say it's get and go. You know, as soon as they hit, they're running and it's action. I think it plays into that because it is that. Because I mean, looking at Shapeshifter, you know, we do have some cuts here and there, but like you said, it's usually on noise, it's usually on these things, but it's because we have a night and day cycle. So I think there's that element to it. But with that being said, I think you're completely right. You know, how do you get to the point where they just flow together, where you don't even notice breaks because they're moving from one to the other? So as you mentioned, they go out there and they're walking around with the EMF reader. you know, we get a little tension for the first time of me basically saying like, come on, they're going around there, they're not getting anything, maybe it's not there. And then I just think, honestly, great, this is probably the best way to do a cheap pop scare, in my opinion, what we did in this one, which is they basically fake it. It drops from the sky, bulb comes down, it breaks, and then we immediately admit that it is fake, but we show the live stream going off, because obviously if you fake something like a glass bulb falling on your head and you said, oh my God, it's ghosts and whatnot, that's going to get a reaction to your live stream. I'm a huge fan of this angle of the faking it element. I really like it in the sense that I think it gives you a balance of, you know, what's real, what's fake. It kind of allows, you know, that I'm not faking it scene as well too. But I think on top of that, more importantly, just dropping something from the sky with a fishing pole worked out really, really well. Huge recommendation.
Yeah, anytime you have glass shatter, it's just very unexpected. And to see it fall and shatter is even more unexpected. I think like our boy James Wan did it in The Conjuring, where the girl's just walking around and you just all of a sudden hear glass break. And it's like one of the better pop scares in that movie. And it's cheap, but guess what? Like, it works. And I think we learned that like glass breaking is like a big thing, but also things coming out and into frame in ways that you don't expect. So that's usually your left and your right frame. You're always expecting, you know, something to come from that point. You're never expecting anything to come from the bottom or top half of the frame. So if you really want a good pop scare, those are the areas that you really want to try and, you know, kind of make things fall out of or into. And you always want to have like kind of engaging dialogue, get people into the moment, and then have like a little bit of a lull. So they're arguing right now on like what to do next. They're like, all right, should we go back to the garage? So you think like you think nothing's going to happen. The EMF reader is not going off. And then the conversation lulls and you hold, beat, 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 falls down, scare. I think that whole setup was great. I think we did a really good job with that. But it shows you we've done this one before. We did this one in the suicide house. And go watch that one and then watch this one. It's completely night and day. And that was, you know, a couple movies. We've learned how to get better. But, I mean, that movie was shot three years ago. So you're looking at 3 years of experience. But that's like the experience that you need to get. Like, you have to have this kind of experience. You have to get better. You have to learn. You have to be able to upload stuff, get feedback from stuff, and then figure out how to make it better. And that's exactly what we did. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, the Murder House 3.0, when we're probably going to do this same exact scare. But I guarantee you, we'll probably have like a really giant chandelier. I know Mike Flanagan did it in his one, and that one always got me in the Haunting of the Hill House. So I definitely think it's, you know, learning, it's getting better, but it's also just really breaking down and understanding how to create a good pop scare to keep your audience engaged. And I think that this is one of the reasons that people, like, if this one missed, I think we would have been in trouble. The fact that it hit, it was rated one of the better scares, really propelled this movie into the next big sequence, which was the lock-in sequence.
Yeah, no, I really do agree with that, in the sense of it being startling. It hits the you know, right scare element, and the chandelier is going to be awesome. So the next scene, though, you know, this is kind of what we end up talking about. You have a pop scare. So what are we going to do next? We have your attention. We're either going to do plot, or we're going to do the other thing, which is stakes. And what do we pick in this scene? We basically increase the stakes here. So boom, right away, you have Kai celebrating. Good job, guys. Good job, Dylan. You have Harper immediately saying, I can't believe we're faking this already. You know, I want more time. I want to do this. So we're doing two things here. We're doing stake and character development. Stakes are, there's a lot riding on this. We need this to be a successful stream so that either they can continue to do this, or they might have to go back to their day jobs. Harper is really looking for paranormal things. And on top of that, there's causing kind of a conflict between the two of them. And it was something where it was always intended to kind of be there in the suicide house, but you will never even know it. It's just missed it. but we really took the time to kind of focus and use this. It develops the characters, but it also does another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about. And I think this is the correction from the biggest mistake that we had in Growing Cabin 13, which was simply have two people. One has to say, no, don't do this. And it goes bad. One person is like, I think we should do this. You're setting up the stakes for Harper to have a reason to stay and for Kai to have a reason to stay. But you're also setting up, they're trying to stay for a different reason. So it's not like this one gaslight thing. And I think it's a really, really great way. You utilize a good pop scare. You immediately develop, okay, Harper's going to want to be real. Kai's going to want to fake it. And Dylan is basically uneasy right now, which is exactly the characters we wanted to establish from this.
Yeah, I think if you're making a horror movie, there's always going to be that one conversation that's usually going to be before the third act or closer to the climax where, you know, it's stay or go. And I think if you don't highlight it, if you cannot show the motivations of all the characters, then you're going to have a hard time with this scene. It's not going to be very believable. So we knew that in mind. We knew down towards the climax of this movie, towards the third act of this movie, that we're going to have a stay or go conversation. And we address this in two ways. You know, the first one was showing that, you know, Harper and Kai both had a reason for being here. You know, Harper believed in the paranormal and Kai wanted money. And then we had, you know, a secondary character, which was Dylan, and we just kind of threw him under the bus. And that's just what we did. He's an intern. No one really cares about the intern, but he needed to be the viewer. Like, Dylan's whole purpose in this whole movie is to be the viewer. He's like, hey guys, weird shit's happening. You should probably leave. Like, this is, I'm coming from a place of logic here. Like, if I was Dylan, I'd be like, peace out. You know, I do not want to be here. And I think you have to have that character, but because we didn't give him a position of power, because, you know, we kind of threw him under the bus and made him an intern, you know, of course they're not going to listen to him, you know, and that's their downfall. They did not give him the attention that he deserved, but you also have to make it so that the other characters have a motive to stay. You can't just be like, yeah, sure, I'd like to stay in this haunted house with this clown that's possessed. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, we dress Kai because we're like, hey, look, we've made more money, you know, in the last hour than we have, you know, doing this combined. It was a great line. So there's Kai's motivation. And then Harper is like, look, we can get something and become really famous. Like, she wanted the story. She was looking beyond the live stream. She wanted like her own, I think we like bring up like a television show or something. So her downfall is fame. So you have money, fame, and then Dylan, who just gets, you know, run over by the bus. But at least when that conversation comes, we've addressed it all the way up to this point. So you know their motivations. We address it at the moment. And I think it was clean. And I don't think anybody brought it up. The only feedback we got on that was that, you know, Harper was being very mean to Dylan. But you needed an intense conversation there. And I don't think it was out of her character. I think that's just her character, is to just, you know, she's a director. She wants to get the best production. And she has this guy who is stopping her from doing that. She's going to be just a little bit more aggressive. So I was happy with that character choice. But once again, all these little breadcrumbs that we've planted from the start of this movie are just leading up to that one moment, because that is probably the hardest thing, you know, that's the hardest scene to do in a horror movie, because it could be so easy for them to just leave and then you don't have a climax. So, I mean, this is just horror. This is just the genre that we write in, but that one's always the hardest. And you really have to be from the start of your movie, working your way up there and planting those breadcrumbs to make that such a seamless transition to the climax.
Yeah, no, I really do agree, you know, especially when you highlight it. It is something that it was super critical to me, especially after watching The Girl in Cabin 13 so many times. It's just like, oh man, you know, you need to try and address this in a very logical way. And I think we did a great job with that one. So that's going to go ahead and wrap up part one of the scene-by-scene breakdown of The Haunting of the Murder House, which is going to be a three-part series, which we go through each one of the scenes, basically give you a little bit more insight to it. Be sure to take a look at The Haunting of the Murder House online for free. Take a look at our Discord as well, because we make movies for our fans with our fans. But until then, have a good one.